The Monty Show on a Thursday, March 22nd. How the heck are you? I'm Monty, that's
Jake.
Make sure you find us on Twitter, The Monty Show. M-O-N-T-Y, The Monty Show. Big show as always today. We got to talk about the shoe game coming up. Nike versus Adidas versus the Curry 5 Low. Which, I'm amazed that Steph Curry's going to wear a low top. The Jazz are in a must-win situation tonight. I'm going to make my case for LeBron James, the NBA MVP, Johnny Manziel, Bryce Harper. It's all coming up on The Monty Show today. Again, find me on Twitter, M-O-N-T-Y, The Monty Show. And no matter where you listen to this show, make sure you find us in two places on the podcast, SoundCloud and iTunes. They're both The Monty Show, M-O-N-T-Y, The Monty Show. Jake, let's start with a huge win for the Cavaliers last night. Against Toronto, and LeBron James played his ass off. First of all, if there's an MVP award and LeBron doesn't win it, it's a shame, because there's no question to me that LeBron James is the most valuable player to his team.
Yeah, and I think not even just to his team, in the entire league. I think when you look at who can affect the game in the most ways at an elite level, better than everybody else, I think that's LeBron James. I mean, when you look at Harden, Harden is the best offensive player in the league right now, in my opinion. But he's not the best defender. He's also not the best passer. He's also not the best rebounder.
Yeah.
LeBron James can shoot the three. LeBron James can drive to the basket. He can defend all five positions. He's a nightmare as a driving kick player, as we saw with Kevin Love to win the game, essentially. So I just think it's LeBron James, and I think it's personal. It's person to person how you define the MVP. For me, the MVP is defined as who can you not replace on your team with just another average Joe? Who is most irreplaceable, and that's LeBron James for the
Cavs.
He's
the most valuable player to his team.
Yeah.
If LeBron's not on that team, and I don't want to hear about war or whatever, wins above replacement. If LeBron's not on that team, that team's not a playoff team.
No.
That team's the worst team in the NBA, in my opinion. And I think you can look at James Harden and the Rockets. Yes, James Harden is a very good player, and he's important to that team, but he's also got another superstar with him. And I don't think LeBron does. You look at this win last night for the Cavs. It was nip and tuck the entire way. LeBron James stirred the drink. 35 points, 17 assists, and 7 boards.
Yeah.
I mean, it's historic.
Yeah.
The 17 assists are absolutely historic. And if you put these teams in a 7-game series, you now believe that the Cleveland Cavaliers can beat the Toronto Raptors in a 7-game series. Remember, they won this game last night without Rodney Hood. They won this game last night without Tristan Thompson, without Larry Nance Jr., without Kyle Korver. All of those guys are gone. Don't play last night. And they still won the basketball game. That's so impressive.
Yeah.
The other thing that's impressive is LeBron said he misses Kev, which is what he calls Kevin Love.
Mm-hmm.
He routinely looked for Kevin Love. Now, some really bad Toronto Raptor help defense, but he routinely looked for and found Kevin Love, who made those threes.
Yeah.
That's really important. And George Hill, his contribution to this team can't be overlooked, because he's doing things now that they haven't had a point guard doing in probably 3 years. He's getting to the basket. He's finishing at the basket. He's hitting his threes. Most importantly, George Hill's a point guard that doesn't need the ball in his hand.
Yeah.
And that's why he is the perfect fit for this team. Can this Cleveland Cavalier team go to Toronto and win in a 7-game series?
I don't know. I think in a 7-game series, that's tough. If both teams are fully healthy, I think the Cavs have a pretty good chance at beating the Raptors. But last night, I saw the Raptors just blow a lot of defensive assignments. I mean, just the perfect example is the Kevin Love dagger three to end the game, essentially.
Yes.
I don't know how you – this is not rocket science. You do not come off the guy in the corner when the drive is on the near side of the lane. You can't do that, and that's exactly what happened. LeBron James read that all day and knew that was going to happen, kicked it to a wide-open Kevin Love. I mean, it's that easy.
And what did they also do to win this game? They shut your boy down. DeMar DeRozan struggled for long stretches of this game. And that second unit for Toronto that's been so good, mainly DeLon Wright, Jakob Poeltl, Fred VanVleet, who had a big game, they did a really good job against that that group.
Right.
Now, I thought Poeltl had a great fourth quarter, which is why he plays in the fourth quarter. But I thought they did a really good job limiting the bench, and I thought they did a really good job of controlling DeMar DeRozan, forcing him. I don't know. I thought they should have taken a three at the end of the game there instead of that turnaround fallaway that DeRozan actually hit.
Well, it wasn't the problem that they took the turnaround fallaway. If you're gonna commit to that strategy, okay, well then go ahead and make the shot, which DeRozan did. The problem was is that they didn't foul quickly enough after that. You ran off. I think it was 3 seconds they let run off.
Yeah.
You completely defeated
from
your own strategy.
From 10.2 to 7.6.
Yeah. I mean, that's just bad execution. So if you're going to do that, you might as well just take the three, and if you miss, the game's over.
They really have got to figure out who they can count on as starters. They have to find more depth than simply Kyle Lowry and DeMar DeRozan.
Yeah.
And that's what's really missing. You can't, because most teams can't play 10 guys in the playoffs. That's the really hard part.
Yeah.
And as well as Poeltl, DeLon Wright is playing really well right now. I really like what he's doing. I like what Poeltl's doing and Van Vliet's doing.
They're getting nice contributions.
But, well, that bench is powering them.
Yeah.
You've got to find three other guys to start who can really contribute. And that, I think, is a big concern for them. Because, by the way, Norman Powell also is going to have to get minutes in the postseason because of how good he is. But, hey, I look at them head-to-head, and whoever earns it is who would win a seven-game series.
Yeah.
Because LeBron worked awfully hard last night. Kevin Love made his shots. Who would have thought that they could win? I don't care where they played the game. It was in Cleveland.
And by the way, they were getting stomped in the first half.
Right, because what was this team? You know, you had no idea what this team was. Without Kyle Lowry, I thought was really sporadic. Okay, well, that means Cleveland's got the advantage. But you're right. Toronto came out to a really fast start. And then you started thinking to yourself, well, you know what? They don't have Kyle Korver there for 17 points a game. They're not going to get, you know, an 8-point, 10-rebound game out of Larry Nance Jr. because he's not there and Tristan Thompson's not there. Well, you have a voracious rebounder in Kevin Love who played really well, shot the three well. Like, it really was a team game. Green was fantastic for them. His defense on DeMar DeRozan. The other thing that was really critical, that high pick and roll is really working for the Cavs.
Yeah.
Really working for the Cavs.
It's really effective. And again, this is why the Rockets are so effective as well. This is a good team comparison because when both of those teams run high pick and roll, they have shooters that they can kick the ball to if the defense collapses. And I think that's what the Cavs were missing, and that's why Kevin Love is so crucial to this team. And I could make an argument that Kevin Love is the most valuable player to the Cavs alone because when he plays, that's a different team.
Oh, totally.
It's a completely different team. And I know Kevin Love obviously isn't better than LeBron James, but what Kevin Love brings to the team and his contributions, you can't put a price on that. And what that does to LeBron's game, you can't put a price on that.
But so how do you get more, if you're the Toronto Raptors, how do you get more out of Serge Ibaka, who you expect more out of? But last night he gives you 4 boards and only 2 assists and 6 points and is a minus 6.
Yeah,
how do you explain that?
Yeah, I think Serge Ibaka really struggles with athletic players. Kevin Love gives him trouble. A guy like Kevin Love would give him trouble because Kevin Love is more athletic than Serge Ibaka. Serge Ibaka is the big man trying to get better at the three, and he's known for making the three in his career. But you need him to rebound. 4 rebounds or whatever it was isn't going to get the job done. He's got to be in double digits.
That's a huge problem. And you cannot allow – how do you allow the Cavaliers to shoot 62.5% from three?
Wow.
How do you allow that?
When I was watching the game thinking – there were so many times when LeBron would drive to the basket, the Raptors would collapse, and then – he would kick it out, and they wouldn't run him off the three-point line.
Yeah.
And there were several instances where they wouldn't collapse, and LeBron is still able to get the pass off somehow.
One other thing we need to talk about is this whining and complaining that LeBron's doing. It's every single play.
Yeah.
I get it. You're getting hit. You're getting fouled. You're getting bumped. I get it.
Yeah.
At what point do you just shut up about it? At what point? Okay, he cries on every single play, and it wears me out.
Yeah.
I am an English football fan, a soccer fan, and those guys dive and whine and complain all the time. I'm at the point where I've accepted it in soccer. I'm not accepting it from LeBron. Like, it's wearing me out.
Yeah.
And he deserves calls. He gets physically battered all the time, but enough is enough.
But he's
already
physically battering the defender as well. So I think this is what I've always said about LeBron specifically in this whole foul argument, how much he should complain versus how much he shouldn't complain. At some point, if you're LeBron James, you have to embrace the idea that you're bringing contact to the defender. So the, what choice does a defender have? He's going to hit you back. I mean, there's no other option.
But why complain about it?
Because I think LeBron wants every call. LeBron thinks he should get calls the way Jordan got calls, the way other players got calls.
And I want to make $1 million a year. But you got to earn that.
Well, and he has earned that.
But no, now here's the critical tipping point. Has LeBron truly earned it, or has he earned his way out of getting those calls?
Wow.
With the whining and complaining, I think he's done the opposite. He hasn't earned it. Now I think he's undone any kind of goodwill. And this is across the NBA as well. Because this relationship between the players and the officials is a huge problem. And frankly, I think it hurts the game. Every play, somebody's complaining about something. And it's got to stop. I don't know how you fix it. Because the players and the officials had a sit-down that did not end well.
Yeah.
So I don't know that there is a way to fix it, but LeBron has to be better than this. LeBron has to be better than this. And I think what has to happen is there has to be a middle road. The players, led by a guy like LeBron, have to say, okay, we're going to stop complaining, but we want serious penalties for officiating mistakes. Like the Marcus Morris win the other night.
Mm.
They missed a 5-second call on the inbound. He clearly had it longer than a 5 count. And you see the official standing there counting it out. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6. And doesn't blow the whistle. Gets it in. Then when he gets it back 3 seconds later, he traveled.
Yeah.
Like clearly traveled. No call. Hits the game-winning shot.
Yeah, I mean, I think that you got to come up with a system that holds referees accountable. And,
yeah.
And this is not just in the NBA. This is all across sports. I think you have to come up with a way to hold refs accountable. And specifically in the NBA, I don't know if it's a shooting percentage, if you will, for refs. You know, the amount of calls that they make correctly versus the amount of calls that they don't call.
But you got to get the obvious ones right.
You got to, it's just like anything else. You got to make the plays you should make. They got to make the calls they should
make. If they miss a 5-second call on an inbound,
you should lose a game.
You should be suspended a game.
I don't even think it's a game. I think you should be fined. I think
You're not working, so you're not getting paid.
I think there's a difference between that. I think you should be fined for it. And it's that simple, because I think if you're being fined for it, you have incentive to get better.
Yeah. Hey, back to the original question here before we move on to the Jazz. The Cleveland Cavaliers are 10.5 games behind Toronto.
Mm-hmm.
Is it reasonable to expect that, let's say they both make it there, because LeBron says, you know how my teams do. If they both make it there, is it reasonable to accept that the Cavs can go to Toronto and win a game 7? To win a series, because you assume that.
Yeah, I mean, I think they're more than capable of doing it, but I don't think you ever want to get there if you're the Cavs. You don't want to be in that position.
Yeah. And by the way, Toronto is one of the best home teams in basketball.
Like I said, this last game between these two, the Raptors did not play their best game. DeMar DeRozan did not have the best DeMar DeRozan game.
No.
So I think it was mostly the Cavs winning the game, but some of this was the Raptors didn't have a great game either.
I'm really surprised that Milwaukee just can't get out of its own way, by the way. I mean, I am stunned that they're a game and a half behind Miami. I'm really surprised by that. Yeah, they really should be better. How about the Jazz? They have tipped off against San Antonio. The Jazz are precariously hanging on to the A spot now. They lost to the Hawks the other night, and it really, and I know it's one loss, but it really has put them in a position now where they're in the 8th seed by a half game behind Minnesota. And they're a game and a half up on Denver. I'm not telling you the world's going to stop spinning if you lose to Dallas tonight. But holy cow, you're in a lot of trouble if you lose to Dallas
tonight. You shouldn't lose to Dallas.
You cannot.
You shouldn't have lost to the Hawks, number one. But number two, you can't lose to Dallas. And I find myself wondering, because we're talking about the Jazz, is this where they do something? Is this the misstep that we always see with the Jazz at some point in the season? And look, I'm not trying to say that, you know, this is the year that they blow it again. But what I am saying is their past actions, well, seriously, their past actions have told me that, yeah, there's something coming. Eventually, they're going to fall off, or they're going to lose a couple games they shouldn't lose, and all of a sudden, that's going to put them out of the playoffs because, you know, 6-8 seed in the West is so freaking tight right
now. Yes, it is.
You know, so you can't afford to lose these games. These are must-win games, and in my opinion, at the end of the year, this is more of a mental grind than anything. The Jazz know they're better. The Mavericks know the Jazz are better than them. Yeah. So,
but the Mavericks also know that Schroeder dropped 41 on them the other night. And if I'd have told you that Atlanta would have a 40% shooting night and only shoot 27% from three in Salt Lake City, you'd have been like, oh, the Jazz win that by double digits. No, didn't happen. Because the Jazz shot 17% from three and 37% from the floor. I think it was that misstep, that one night. This was not catastrophic unless you let it become.
If you lose tonight, it starts to be catastrophic.
I think this is a must win. I know that I'm probably making too much of that, and Jazz fans, you're probably going to lose your mind. This game in Dallas tonight, and right now they just tipped off. It's very early, but this game tonight is remarkably important because you have got to get your swagger back. You have got to become that team that goes back on another long winning streak. And it's so funny, isn't it, that you lose after a long streak like that, and the insecurity just seeps back into your soul.
Starts creeping in.
Right?
Because you start questioning yourself. But yeah. I don't think a guy like Donovan Mitchell is questioning himself. I think Donovan Mitchell knows that as a team, collectively, they didn't have a great night. And the Hawks had a decent night. You know, and so you're going to lose some games. They are human beings. I think everybody acknowledges that fact. So I think they come out tonight and handle their business. Rudy Gobert has got to get back to it.
Well, somebody's got to learn to guard a guard because J.J. Barea has got 10 points already, you know, and Schroeder had 41 the other night. Are we looking at a trend? I don't know. They're an excellent defensive team. They're one of the best defensive teams in the NBA.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm hardly going to hit the panic button on that. But you, this time of year, I agree 100% with what you said, which is it's a mental game. So you start seeing patterns develop, and let's not allow this to become a pattern where the Jazz struggle to guard the three-point line or allow guys to penetrate. And you just cannot have that.
Yeah.
And especially on the road, you'd really like to see them blow out Dallas. And I'm hoping that happens tonight. I really like the way that they're playing. I like what they're getting from Ricky Rubio. I love what they're getting from Jay Crowder. I think Dennis Lindsay's done a great job building and developing this team.
Yeah, and Periscope is saying Favors being out in the Atlanta game really hurt them.
Oh, it did. There's no question about it. But anytime you miss a starter, you're going. But if I go back to that Atlanta game, is he really why you lost?
No.
What hurts you is you didn't shoot well. You didn't.
And by the way,
well.
Joe Ingles had a wide open look.
And he's one of the best 3-point shooters in the league, Jingles.
Mm-hmm.
And he misses two, not one, two wide open threes. And the one was almost an air ball out of the corner.
Yeah.
That's not who that guy is. He's better than that. They had an off night. And let's hope that it's an off night. And I agree, without Derek Favors, man, he's a real important player for you. And that you didn't have him is a bummer. He's a guy that gives you. You know, he's a double-double guy on any given night.
Yeah.
Points and boards. And those are really important boards for the Jazz. But here nor there, I think this is a must-win. You've got to right the ship. When you only have a game and a half margin between making the playoffs and missing the playoffs, you got to right the ship.
Yeah.
So I'm not, again, I think Denver, I hate to say anybody's done, but I think Denver is a team that's going to struggle to come because I don't think they have an offensive identity.
Yeah, they're always going to struggle. I mean, Jokic is not.
He's a stud.
He is a stud, yes. I agree with that. I'm not saying he's not a good player. What I am saying is he's not being used in the best way possible. And so I think anytime that's the case with any star player, you're not going to be a great team. You know, you got to figure out how to use your best talent and then fit everyone around them.
Yeah, and they have a meat grinder of a schedule, by the way. I mean, they're at Washington, I think, tomorrow. They have a real difficult schedule to finish out the season. Washington, Philly, Toronto, Oklahoma City.
Good luck.
Then they come home from Milwaukee, Indiana, Minnesota.
All playoff
at the
teams.
Clippers, Portland at Minnesota.
Right,
they're
we'll
not making the
later.
They're not Denver's not making the playoffs because they're not consistent enough and they're not well coached enough or coached well enough, excuse me, to beat those teams.
Yeah.
And the Jazz are very well coached, and I think they're more than talented enough to do the job here.
Yeah, and I don't have any doubt that they'll get the job done, but again, I wouldn't be surprised if this is their end for whatever reason. If they hit a wall right here, I mean, who's really going to be surprised?
Hey, let's talk about Steph Curry. He is back tomorrow for Golden State. But I'm really surprised at the story coming out that he's going to wear a low-top shoe tomorrow night. And Steph Curry's going to wear this Curry 5 low, brand-new shoe from Under Armour for him, which is okay. I don't like. It looks like a lot like KD's shoe. I don't love the shoe. We're going to talk shoes here in about 10 minutes. But I don't like the idea of Steph Curry, who's coming back from an ankle injury.
Oddly enough.
Who is prone and has had chronic ankle injuries, that he's going to wear a low top. I don't know. If you're the Warriors, I don't know how you let this happen. I really don't. I don't understand this.
Well, I mean, I think it's not up to the Warriors if he wears a high top or a low top.
Boy,
I think,
you got to lobby him, though.
Well, I'm sure they are lobbying him. I'm sure somebody's told him, hey, what's your logic for wearing a low top when you have a history of ankle injuries? And look, you know, the worst ever ankle roll for me was in a KD 5, the high top KD 5.
Yeah.
You know, that's one of the worst ankle rolls I've ever had. So I don't know. I agree he shouldn't be wearing a low top. He should be wearing a high top. And, you know, if you roll your ankle in a high top, I guess it is what it is. But he's going to get scrutinized for this. And I do think before the playoffs are over, he'll roll his ankle again.
Curry said, quote, "These shoes are an evolution in my signature series and engineered to work in tandem with my braces better than the shoes have previously."
I could see that. As far as working with the brace, I could see that. Low tops are better, work better with ankle braces, there's no doubt.
Yeah. Well, hey, look, they need to sell shoes, and I think we all know that lows sell better than highs.
Yep.
In basketball, there's no doubt about that. And, you know, I'm living proof of that. I much prefer my Hyperdunk lows to my highs. But you cannot, this will be mind-blowing. I hope it works out for him because the NBA is much, much, much better off with Steph Curry on the floor.
Yeah, no kidding.
Yeah, you don't need him in a
It's weird that
clothes.
The Warriors have not been good. You know, it's just odd to not see the Warriors on SportsCenter every morning.
Yeah, hey, before we get to Johnny Manziel, what do you make of this Kawhi Leonard story? Because this is some cray-cray-nar-nar for the San Antonio Spurs. I probably shouldn't have said that. This is a little nutty.
Yeah.
The San Antonio Spurs, according to the Woj bomb, Adrian Wojnarowski with ESPN, says that the Spurs held a players-only meeting to beg Kawhi Leonard to return. Danny Green immediately said that never happened on Twitter when Woj bomb tweeted it out.
Mm-hmm.
But the more the day has gone on, the story has evolved. According to Adrian Wojnarowski, Spurs guard Tony Parker, a four-time NBA champion, quarterbacked the meeting after the team's victory over the Timberwolves on Saturday night. Non-players were asked to leave the locker room. The conversation was described as tense and emotional. Several teammates spoke up, expressing frustration and confusion over a growing divide that has created significant tension between Kawhi Leonard and the Spurs. Outside the Spurs locker room, players' voices could be heard through the door. Leonard remained resolute in his response, insisting that he has a good reason to continue sitting out because he still isn't fully healthy. Leonard told his teammates that he planned to return once he felt able to do so. Your thoughts?
I just think he doesn't want to play for the Spurs.
Very clearly.
I think he's healthy, in my opinion. He's 100% healthy. I think he's playing this along. I think he just wants to get to free agency, and I think he wants to win a championship. He's tired of being second.
It's the Spurs. It's the Spurs.
Who are we playing? They are old.
Right, but this is one of the all-time great franchises in recent NBA history. I mean, from Robinson and Duncan to...
Dude, the fall off is steep.
Well, right now it is. But times get bad, and you're telling me that all of a sudden you fall off? And now all of a sudden you want to be traded? No. Come on. Really?
I don't think he wants to be traded. I think he wants to hit free agency. I think he's done with this year. I think he doesn't want to go back on the floor for a team that he's not going to be with next year. I think he's done with it.
This is a huge problem for me. I think this is one of those situations where Kawhi Leonard is trying to write his own script, and I get it. And I understand that Kawhi Leonard is a guy that believes in himself. I understand that Kawhi Leonard is a really fabulous freaking basketball player.
Yeah.
But he is under contract in 2018, 2019, and they need him. They're paying him $18.8 million this year not to play. And he needs to play. They're paying him $20 million next year. He needs to play.
Yeah.
And my opinion is, I think you end this season, you sit down with him, and if it doesn't go well, you trade him.
Mm-hmm.
Because I agree with you, he's going to walk away in free agency. There seems to be some, whatever the fracture is, he's going to walk away in free agency. But what's going on now can't continue. And guys like Popovich, guys like R.C. Buford, guys like Tony Parker, like I'd love to know where Tim Duncan is in this whole thing. Because Tim Duncan, whether you want to believe it or not, is still a pretty incredible force in that locker room. And I'm really surprised that a Spurs player is in this situation. I mean, I'm really surprised.
I think by all accounts, Kawhi Leonard is a different dude, though. I think that's been well documented. Kawhi Leonard is not your average Joe. You know, he's a different kind of guy. And so I think, you know, this is very unpredictable. I don't know how this is going to end up. I don't know, you know, if they do sit down after the season and it goes sideways, I mean, they could get a hell of a lot for Kawhi Leonard.
But has he earned this? I mean, this is a guy that won you a championship. He was an NBA Finals MVP. He is arguably the best defensive player in basketball. And some people would like to make the argument the most well-rounded player in basketball. Has he earned the right to say, hey, I'm calling my shot. I'm not playing. I'm not healthy.
No, I mean, I think I don't know who would have earned the right to say I'm not going to play and you're still going to pay me. I mean, I don't think
but
there's many
people. But that's the reality of guaranteed contracts.
Well, it is the reality of guaranteed contracts, but I don't think that's the mindset of Kawhi Leonard. I think Kawhi Leonard wants to go to a different organization for whatever reason. Clearly, something, in my opinion, something was said to him. There was a conversation between the organization and Kawhi Leonard and his agent or whatever where Kawhi Leonard got rubbed the wrong way, and he's flipping them the bird the rest of the year. You cannot tell me he's not healthy.
I struggle with this. Who the hell are you, Kawhi Leonard?
He's one of the best players in the league.
I get it. And I think he won a defensive player of the year. I get it. They're paying you $18 million. You might want to suit up. Like, really? Have we lost so much perspective in this league that for $18 million you're going to raise your middle finger and say, I'm hurt? And I don't like questioning players who say they're hurt. If he says he's hurt, I'm going to take him at face value. But something doesn't seem right
here. It's suspicious at best.
Something doesn't seem right here.
Yeah.
And I don't know how you fix this because it seems broken. Now, if the Lakers can find a way to keep Kobe, I'm sure the Spurs can find a way to keep Kawhi. I don't know what that looks like. But if I'm the Spurs, I don't keep this guy because it sends the wrong message.
Mm-hmm.
I think you trade him and you turned him into whatever it is. Lottery picks. I don't know what you turn him into. Call the Lakers. Hell, I don't know. Trade him to the Eastern Conference if that makes you feel better. Turn this guy into a lottery pick at the least.
Yeah.
It's got to be players and lottery picks or something. But I think you got to make a change here. And the guard change is coming.
Yeah.
Because Ginobili and Parker, TD's already retired. Like, there's a major shift coming in San Antonio.
Yeah.
And I think Pop is close to retirement. I think there's a lot of merit in trading Kawhi Leonard.
They're just in that weird place as an organization. I mean, all those things you just mentioned, all the players that are on their way out, Pop being on the way out, Kawhi Leonard and his whole saga, they're just in an oddball situation right now, and I think they just got to weather the storm.
Would you trade him?
Yeah, I would. I would trade him.
I would want two first-rounders.
I'd want two starters.
I'd be open to, and just thinking through, like, where's the reasonable place? Well, the team's got to have a bunch of young players. So you're obviously the first team that comes to mind, Philadelphia 76ers.
I could see the Sixers. I could see the Lakers, although I think the Lakers are adamantly going after LeBron, obviously. But
yeah.
But I think I could see the Lakers if LeBron doesn't work out. I could see the Bucks.
I can't believe the San Antonio Spurs would trade him to the Lakers. They're bitter rivals. Like, I can't believe that would ever happen. From Robert Horry to Derek Fisher to, mm-hmm. like, they're bitter rivals.
Yeah.
I can't see that happening. But I could see the Sixers. I could see the Knicks. I could see a team like Brooklyn. You know, to me, if you yeah, have but, cap I mean,
what
space,
what does Brooklyn have to offer? Picks. That's it.
Lottery picks. You know, you need a team that's in the lottery, and or has somebody's lottery pick and has cap space. That's what you need. You know, like send him to the who's the worst team in the NBA right
Orlando.
Now?
Orlando.
Orlando's not the worst team. You think they're the worst team in the NBA?
One of the worst teams, yeah. Phoenix.
I think Phoenix is the worst team. I think Atlanta is one of the worst teams. Can you trade him to the Phoenix Suns? Trade him to the Phoenix Suns and
Booker and a pick?
I would ask for Booker. That's never going to happen. Never going to happen.
Josh Jackson and a pick.
You know, but that really, there's not a lot of star talent there. I'm Orlando, but does Aaron Gordon excite you? Mm. Is that a guy that you're willing to trade? I'm probably not, right? I don't think there's a lot of physically talented guys that you're willing to trade for. But I would absolutely call anybody at the bottom of the Eastern Conference and say, let's work something out.
Yeah.
You know, because what do you do? Hey, send me Kristaps Porzingis.
I mean, I think before you start making calls, you got to have another sit down with him and talk to him and just get a real good grip on where he's at and what exactly he wants.
Yeah.
You got to understand what Kawhi Leonard wants. And then you have to understand, well, what do we want to do with him because that's what he wants. And once you're at that place, you can start making calls or you can restructure his contract if that's what he wants. Or you can, I mean, there's just so many variables that we don't know about.
Can you imagine Kawhi Leonard, Nil Aquina, and Porzingis together?
Yeah, good. I mean, it would be a nice little group of players there for sure. I mean, Porzingis and, you know, Porzingis is a great player. There's no question
Send
about
me
that.
Every draft pick you have for the next 10 years.
Yeah, you know, like.
You know, but that's my point. Anyway, I think you got to move him. And I think it's got to be to the East. It's certainly not going to be the Lakers. Send him to the bottom of the East. Orlando's an interesting. You know, anybody would want him.
Mm-hmm.
But I think you got to make a move almost for the sake of making a move. Find me on Twitter, The Monty Show, MONTY, The Monty Show. Johnny Manziel threw at San Diego today for their pro day. And he looked really good. He showed up, threw to their receivers, and really it was a Johnny Manziel showcase. Anywhere between 10 and 13 teams showed up because I've seen 10, 12, and 13. The New England Patriots had a meeting with him, weighed him, and met with him. What do you make of all this? Because this is a stunning development. And you know what I'm going to say already. Well, where's Colin Kaepernick? Why isn't Colin Kaepernick meeting? Why isn't Colin Kaepernick working out? Why isn't he showing up at a pro day?
Why is Colin Kaepernick not in this spring league?
Oh, he will be. If he doesn't sign, I see, maybe I'm stupid. And there is a good chance that I'm dense. I have a really thick skull.
Huge head.
Huge. My point is, Colin Kaepernick will get a contract somewhere. I don't know where that is. There's a lot of teams that need Jets don't have a quarterback. How do the New York Jets not call Colin Kaepernick? They signed Terrell Pryor today. Good pickup.
Yeah.
Colin Kaepernick works. You know, if you're the Cleveland Browns, really? You don't want all the attention you can get? You know.
Well, they're probably drafting, though, too.
Look at Eric. Here's another guy. Eric Reed, safety late to the 49ers, mm-hmm. said today that he likely will not kneel down during the national anthem, that he will protest or work in activism in other ways. Does that get him signed? I don't know. Eric Reed is an all-pro caliber safety who's unsigned.
Yeah.
You know, it'll be interesting. Johnny Manziel, does he get a contract out of this, and does he get a contract before Kaepernick?
I definitely think he gets a contract before Kaepernick. I think teams want to see him play in the spring league first, evaluate him a little bit, see what he can bring to the table, and then if he does well there, then I think, yeah.
He'll not get for a year, though.
Well.
That's another year out of football.
Well, that's Johnny Manziel's problem, not the NFL's problem, you know, to be blunt about it. And I think somebody could just sign him as their backup and say, hey, look, you know, we'll work with you, you know, during the week in practice, and we'll see what you can bring to the table. And if there's an opportunity, if somebody goes down, and you can step in.
Yeah.
But I don't know. It just screams hypocrisy. It screams hypocrisy. I don't know how are we judging a guy more harshly for expressing his opinion rather than being addicted and being completely irresponsible? I don't know how that's possible. I really don't. But
I don't know either.
One thing to consider, though, the Canadian Football League owns Johnny Manziel's rights still, so that's a little wrinkle in this whole thing. Yeah.
But in Canada, I don't think that would prohibit him from signing with an NFL team, at least not to my knowledge. They own him in Canada, but he didn't sign a contract there for this exact reason, I think. The Colin Kaepernick, Johnny Manziel thing blows my mind. But this was a great move by Johnny Manziel. This was a stroke of genius. However he did this, whoever did this for him, I say great move.
And by the way, what he said after the whole thing was said and done was really smart. When they asked him, you know, what advice do you have for the incoming talent, you know, in the draft process? And he said, enjoy the process. I was way too stressed out about it. I didn't enjoy it. That probably led to some of my indiscretion.
It wasn't fun.
Yeah.
He said it wasn't fun.
Yeah.
If it's not fun, what are you doing? By the way, he threw really well.
He didn't throw better than Kaepernick did.
Well, but Kaepernick also didn't throw in front of 13 NFL scouts.
Yeah.
He also didn't throw talent evaluators. He didn't throw to legitimate college wide receivers. He didn't throw in the rain like it was raining in San Diego and Southern California today. Like, I mean, this is just really impressive.
Yeah, it's a nice step for Johnny Manziel in the comeback tour. I agree. He did what he had to do.
Jake, it shows maturity.
Which is most important for Johnny Manziel.
He again weighs apparently close to 199 pounds, which is exactly what you're hoping for. You know, he's over 200 pounds.
Well, listen, I mean, he's training 6 days a week. And 3 days a week, he's driving down to San Diego to throw and do on-field activity. So he's doing everything that he can do. But I think what the biggest difference, and this is what I said last time we talked about Cap, the biggest difference between Manziel and Cap right now after this whole throwing session with Manziel today is that, look, Manziel is getting out in front of it. He's being proactive about getting back into the league. You know, he's saying, hey, here's a pro day opportunity for me. Let me go ahead and make the most of this. It's in the rain, so bad weather teams will sign me.
Yeah.
You know, they can see that I can still throw the ball.
Does this shake Kaepernick's tree? Does this wake him up?
It better wake him up. If he's not woke after this, I don't know.
I think the Houston tape that came out of him throwing in Houston was a wake-up call. I really do.
For
Colin Kaepernick, it showed that he was ready to go, that he is serious about getting signed.
Yeah.
The fact that he's out talking about that, I want to play in the NFL.
Mm-hmm.
I want to be there. This is what my life's work is. I think that's fantastic. I think it's absolutely, positively the right thing to be doing.
But what's the next step? Because it's nice to make videos, but there's a big difference between videos like that, which are good, but now you got to keep progressing. He made that video. Johnny Manziel threw in front of scouts and had a meeting with the Patriots of all people.
Yeah. I think Colin Kaepernick's got to get himself in front of a team. He's got to find somebody that will be his evangelist, that will root for him. I think that's hugely important. I think Kaepernick gets signed before Manziel. Just a guy. I think the backlash, the pissed off people, if Johnny Manziel gets signed before Kaepernick, I think the backlash alone would be too much. I think Colin Kaepernick... He has earned a job. He has worked hard. He's in shape. He's improved his mechanics. He's been a really good citizen.
Mm-hmm.
He's given $1 million to inner city activation. I mean, the guy has earned a shot in the NFL. And he's good enough to play in the league.
Yeah.
It's surprising to me. Hey, let's talk the shoe game. I am a huge, huge connoisseur of shoes. At this moment, I probably own close to 40 pairs of shoes, I would guess, off the top of my head. And we're talking about this because the earnings for Adidas and Nike were announced today. How about Adidas? Adidas earned $5.95 billion in revenue in the third quarter.
Okay.
That's a lot of money. And they disappointed Wall Street. They were marked down to a hold. So when you announce your earnings calls as a publicly traded company, you are in status. Every fund, whether, you know, think of the big names, the Merrill Lynch's, whoever you invest with, right? All of these funds listen to like credit ratings for companies. Adidas was a buy. After this earnings call today, it was a hold. So there is real question about a company that made $5.95 billion in a quarter in revenue. Nike, by the way, made $8.98 billion in revenue in the third quarter. They were above expectations. They broke expectations. They beat the street. Is Nike still the better shoe company? And are you surprised that Adidas is struggling? And one more note before you answer that. Both of them are struggling in North America. Asia and Europe are powering their revenue. So are you surprised that Nike is still doing so much better than Adidas?
No, I mean, I think Nike has long been looked upon more highly than Adidas, in my opinion. I think Nike basketball alone is dominated for the longest time. I mean, decades at this point. I mean, so when you look at, you know, their dominance in the basketball brand and then in lifestyle, I mean, you're either, you love Adidas or you love Nike. And I'm a Nike guy.
I'm a huge Nike guy.
I mean, look, we did shoes the other day on this show.
Last week.
We bought all these shoes. And so I think, I don't know. I think the biggest problem for Nike is price point. Their competitors are trying to undercut them. If you look at, you know, the Kobe Mamba Rage, I have two pairs of them. They're $100. Great value for that shoe. But if you look at the LeBron 15 Fruity Pebbles, they're $185, I think. Damian Lillard's shoe is $115.
Yeah.
So the price difference is massive for me. And I think a lot of people can get by the price point because they believe truly that Nike is a better quality product. And I can't, I don't know what's better quality, but I'm a Nike guy.
But I'm a Nike guy as well. But here's a huge problem for Adidas. I love Adidas casuals. So, and if this is too minutiae on shoes, I'm sorry. We'll and trust me, we will be quick. I'm sorry. I'm a shoe maker.
No, I love shoes, man.
I look at Adidas and they don't make a size 15 in a lot of their shoes. They simply, I wear a size 15. They don't make them. So it's really hard for me to wear their shoes. And I really want to wear Adidas casuals. I love the way they look. But there's some Adidas casuals that are $269. You know, their Ultra Boost is doing really well for them. It's $180, right? Like
for a casual.
Yeah, if they made it in my size and in the colorways that I like, I would absolutely be all over that.
So let me get this right. You're essentially paying $185 for a running shoe, essentially, is what that is.
Essentially, yeah.
I'm not doing that. Like,
yeah, like
that's
they're
not happening.
They have a shoe that's called an NMD by Adidas. That's $170, and I love it.
But for a casual, help me.
Yeah, they're EQT. The Adidas EQT, which is, again, a shoe that I really, really like, is $120.
That's better.
I really like it, but I can't get it in a size 15.
Mm-hmm.
And for me, that's a problem. There's somebody doing donuts
out
on our street, which is so rare. Anyway, the point is, I look at a lot of Adidas shoes, and I think that, like, their basketball shoes, their Harden shoes, I love them.
Yeah, it's a clean shoe.
I absolutely love them. But I can't get, it's really hard to find it. And they're only $150. I say only $150.
For Nike, that'd be the KD10, right?
Yeah. Their Harden Volume 2 is only $140, which is a really good price point.
Mm-hmm.
The Dame is $115.
How do you beat that?
You don't. Dame 4, and it's a good-looking shoe. Man, I really like it.
Yeah.
But I can't get a lot of those in a size 15.
Yeah.
And that's a huge problem for me. Now, you're a size 13. You could, the world's your oyster, friend. Mm-hmm. Like, you can get any shoe you want. Now, let's flip to Nike. I'm personally right now on an Air Max 270 run.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I love that shoe. I can get it in a size 15 in every single colorway.
Yeah.
And for my money, I look at what is happening at Nike. The reason that I like Nike so much more is that their shoes are comfortable. I'm a huge Air Max fan with Nike, huge Air Max fan. So this Air Max 270 is kind of a hybrid Air Max shoe. I can get it for $150. That's one of their best casuals right now that I can get for $150. I love that.
Yeah.
Their retro lines, all of their Jordans, I love that. Now, you want to talk about functionality and you want to talk about basketball? Like the KD, I really like the KD. And it used to be that KD was the, I got to say the economical choice.
He was the little brother to LeBron.
Yeah, not anymore. That now has fallen to Kyrie at $120, yeah. right? Because LeBron's up at almost $200, $185. Like yeah. the Fruity Pebbles LeBron yeah. is going to launch, and it's going to be, I think it's going to be $210, depending on who you believe. But they also have this wide variety, this wide range of shoes. Like I can get Paul George's shoe, which I think is really sharp, the PG2, for $110. I can get the Kobe ADs for, depending on which AD I want to get, I can get them for $150.
Yeah.
I can also, on the secondary market with the shoe boutiques, I can pay up to $225 for that shoe. You know, the shoe that I wear, the Nike Hyperdunk, the React Flyknit, is $160, and they restocked it, so I can get it in four colors and any size.
Yeah.
That's why Nike's winning. And you know why else Nike's winning? Because everybody's wearing Nike. How many different Kobes are there on the floor? Last night, DeMar DeRozan debuted a Beautiful. Brand new Kobe, and people went freaking nuts over the new Kobe
I'd
that
buy
DeMar
it in
DeRozan
a second.
Did. It's not released yet. And people, one of the biggest search terms is, when is that Kobe coming out? Like the Mamba Rage is $100.
That's it. I've been preaching that for the longest time. I mean, that's just
You're
a
exactly
stupid
right on
value.
That.
I mean, that's so good.
So let's recap. Nike, there's wide range of availabilities. They restock their sizes. Now, I'll also say one of the shoes that I wish that I could get that I cannot get, and it's incredibly frustrating right now. I wear a lot of like Huaraches. I'm a huge Huarache fan. I just got my first pair of Huaraches since as an adult. Like I had them when I was younger. But they just released a shoe called a Nike Epic React Flyknit. Mm-hmm. Sold out. Can't get it in a 15.
Yeah.
I can get it in an 11. I can't at all get it in the Royal Blue because that's 100% sold out. But that's what's happening at Nike now. They give LeBron this Epic React Flyknit shoe, their new running shoe. He wears it into the arena, and it's a big deal. It's on all the shoe Instas. It's on Twitter. Mm-hmm. It's all over the place. That shoe sold out in less than a day. Every colorway, every size sold out.
Yeah.
Can't get it at Nike. Can't get it at Foot Locker. Can't get it at Finish Line. Like, it's amazing.
Yeah.
Adidas is not doing that. Adidas is not, in
my
opinion.
Well, because the top names aren't wearing Adidas.
Well, James Harden's a pretty top name. Dame's a pretty top name.
LeBron and KD are king of the hill, bro.
And Kobe is still getting
and
it done.
Kobe and Kobe is still king of the hill.
Russ getting it done with the
Dude,
Jordan
his shoe
line.
Is ugly, man.
Yeah, but it's selling a lot. And CP3's new Jordan is
ugly.
Selling, but it's selling a lot. And my point is, when you have stars that can move shoes, that's a big deal.
It is.
And then we should talk about Under Armour. Because the Curry 5, it's okay. It's okay.
Better than the 4.
It's okay. It's okay.
It's better than the 4.
Way better. But well, are you really saying something? The 4 was horrendous. The 3 was terrible. Like, Steph Curry, and this is not an exaggeration, Steph Curry's shoes so poorly from the 2 and the 3 that they almost went out of business. The 4, it picked up a little bit more, right? This 5 has to sell well for them. I own one pair of Curry's. It's the Nothing But Nets, the red shoe that went to malaria prevention. Like that shoe a lot. I wear it as a casual. I don't wear it as a basketball shoe. But the Curry's don't sell well. And they're not expensive. I mean, you can, if you go to Under Armour right now, like you can get you can get a Curry for $120. Okay, that's great.
Yeah.
But why?
Like, it's not better than Nike or Adidas, and that's really saying something.
You think? So you don't think it's better?
No.
I think it's close. But they also have a Curry 1 mid that's $160. That Curry 1, people love that shoe.
Yeah.
Sold really well. So they kept making it. The problem is nobody's buying the 2 or the 3, and they really need the 4 and the 5 to do better.
Yeah.
They are way off. And people, they did a survey, and people said that Under Armour is now, quote-unquote, an old brand they used to buy but don't buy anymore.
Ugh.
How does Under Armour get hip again? Because they've got Lindsey Vonn. They've got J.J. Watt. J.J. Watt! They've got Steph Curry.
Kemba Walker.
Kemba Walker, thank you. But how do you get hip again?
I don't know. I don't know. You got to find a way to sign the biggest names, and those names aren't available right now.
Yeah, I don't know what you do, because I don't think that they have the money to just throw, like The Rock released a new line of clothing with them, his updated line, right? Like the Rock is, I don't know how it's selling, you know, like people are not excited about that, I don't think anyway, but they have some big name athletes. They've got the Lindsey Vonns of the world. They've got, like, they have good names. It's not enough.
But
that's
Lindsey
the problem.
Vonn isn't going to move shoes the way LeBron James will.
I would agree with that. I would agree with that. So we'll see. It'll be interesting to see what happens. Under Armour is very much a football brand, in my opinion.
Yeah, it
They're
is.
Not a basketball
Football and baseball.
Brand. You could buy any shoe right now. Money's not an object. Is there a shoe you're buying?
It's either another pair of Kobe's or a Dame shoe.
I think I would probably get every colorway of the 270 in that Flyknit running shoe. I'm totally a Nike guy. Totally a Nike guy.
Yeah, I mean, do it.
Follow the show on Twitter, The Monty Show, M-O-N-T-Y, The Monty Show. Make sure you subscribe on SoundCloud and iTunes, M-O-N-T-Y, The Monty Show. We'll see you tomorrow. Say goodbye, Jake.
Goodbye, Jake.
Motivation, motivation, you can